talking to my people, yeah. Talking to the ghetto, get down. You're out there floating on your own, hoping the streets will somehow occupy your mind. You fight the hurt when you're alone. Seems as though reality dropped another life at your feet. Now that you face another day, it leaves you feeling like you'd like to take it home. Your eyes see things and say, no way. Feels like there's an enemy in everyone who loves you. Tell me,
do you really think that
the government cares about you?
No, they don't.
Ghetto people, who you gonna turn to next?
Who you gonna turn to?
Listen to me, I'm trying to tell y'all, yeah.
Ghetto people.
Self-respect.
Stop it,
people.
Show some love for yourself,
people.
Life can take some strange turns on you. Living with the things thrown at you leaves you in the cold with a day that's not worth having. Chances are the shortfalls of greed won't ever come to feel what you need. You really want inside can only come from you. The day will come when all of your pride leaves you standing around looking like, what am I gonna do? You have those feelings deep inside, a strange kind of sadness you can never get used to.
Ghetto people, what are you trying to prove?
Come on, tell me, y'all.
Do you really think that?
Do you really think that
the world gives a damn about you?
Hell no, it don't.
Ghetto people, who you gonna turn to next?
Who you gonna turn to?
Listen, people, you better take a look at yourself,
yeah. Talking to my people,
eyes, but you just don't see
what you're living
at. Like you're living,
living like you're living,
caught up in the make-believe,
lost in your dreams,
yeah. Ghetto people, stop giving up your self-respect.
Stop it,
ghetto people.
Talking to my people, yeah.
Can take some strange turns on you. Living with the things thrown at you leaves you in the cold with a day that's not worth having. Chances are the shortfalls of greed won't ever come to feel what you need when what you really want inside can only come from
with your life,
running like a rare disease,
running like a rare disease.
Yeah.
Motherland Media is on the air. You are listening to African Perspectives on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. African Perspectives, where we talk about the issues of our day from an African worldview, an African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak. Having been granted permission, to our ancestors whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters and friends, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. So I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is always an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who is living, and everyone who will live in the future. We have a common ancestral root. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were other cultures as well, such as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, great civilizations that were flourishing while Europe was still in a medieval or dark age. So we pour this libation to those contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the brothers and sisters who suffered the Maafa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, uprooted out of Africa, laying a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. They are now in North America, Central America, South America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to brothers and sisters who suffered the Holocaust of enslavement, of captivity. We do not know their names, but because of them, we are here. So we honor them and their sacrifice. We say Ashe. We pour libation to those men and women who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you'll know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a slave want to do? It wants to get free. There's over 400 recorded revolts of our people fighting on the continent, throughout the Middle Passage, and this hemisphere. We resisted. We were not slaves. A slave is somebody or something that submits its will to a master, and we haven't and we will never submit. So we give honor and reverence to those men and women who fought. Denmark Vesey, Gabriel Prosser, Harriet Tubman, Nat Turner, and many, many others. We honor them. We respect them for always standing and fighting for the liberation of our people. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history has a free and proud and productive people. We say ashe. We pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good community life because we don't have good family life. Conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is bad because we lack consciousness. Consciousness is more than just awareness. It's a deeper understanding of who you are culturally, historically, and the necessity to come together to produce family, which is produces good community life. So we pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We say ashe. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Esante Sana means thank you. Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi, Hotep family. Hope all is well with you today. Hope you had a good day yesterday, even better day today, and a fantastic and glorious weekend upcoming. And hope you get a chance to do all the things that you want to do, need to do, have to do, should do, must do, better do. And I hope that the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But if it isn't, get it done anyway. I know here in Atlanta, they're forecasting a fantastic weekend. Great weather for the rest. In fact, the forecast for the next 5 days is going to be real nice. So I know it was cold here last few days. I mean, really, really cold. A lot of Atlanteans were complaining. I ain't complaining, because I know what it could be. Hell, it's still winter. It's not spring yet. Another day or two, I think it is. The 20th, 21st will be the start of the spring, the equinox. This program, African Perspectives, is here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time. All times I'm going to give are Eastern Times. That's right. 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific Time, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen live, you can go to the archives. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, and then you can scroll down and you'll see that red, black, and green Africa, and with the backdrop of the lion, the red, black, and green African lion face. That is us. That is African Perspectives. And you can check out previous recorded programs. They're dated and titled. So that's what you can do. But I really love when you folks listen live, and even more important when you call in and engage in dialogue. So African Perspectives every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. On Mondays, Acres of Diamonds, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. on Time for an Awakening. And then right after that, Let's Buy Black, 8 p.m. to 9 p.m., which is also a podcast. You can view them on Facebook. On Tuesdays, Dr. William Rogers, Black Reality Think Tank, with host Dr. William Rogers, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. on Tuesdays. On Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC. Revive, that's 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. And then Thursdays, Us Lifting Us, ULU, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa. Cooperative economics, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. And, of course, today is the start of the Power Summit weekend for Us Lifting Us. And, of course, this evening, at the Cafe, Cafe Ulu, located on 2036 Sylvan Road here in Atlanta. We'll have a welcoming reception for the brothers and sisters from around the country and literally around the world. Brother Madike, who is from Senegal, he will be in attendance. Brother Madike, love to have him on the program. And, of course, the cafe itself is open Monday through Friday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Saturday and Sunday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. But tomorrow it will be closed to us. We're having our summit meeting at the cafe. And then we're moving to the Atlanta Technical College, 1580 Metropolitan Parkway in Atlanta. 1580 Metropolitan Parkway, and the Power Summit starts at 2 p.m., from 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. Of course, it is free. Models of Cooperative Economic Empowerment. We'll have a lot of presentations and a panel discussion. Brother DJ will talk about us lifting us. And then we have some other presenters talking about what they are doing around the country, some literally around the world, to establish economic empowerment for our brothers and sisters. So our Power Summit is this weekend. Check us out this evening at Cafe Ulu with a reception for members and guests. And you can be a guest. Just come on through. Come on through. And then more importantly, come on through tomorrow afternoon at Atlanta Technical College on Metropolitan Parkway from 2 to 6 p.m. Us lifting us. ULU, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people. Today is Friday, and at 8 p.m. this evening, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Time for an awakening, 8 p.m. this evening. Check them out. Always having good conversation, good guests. Tomorrow, Saturday, Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And then Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., Revive with Sister PLC. Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., Revive. And Sunday night, 7 p.m. until it's time for an awakening. It's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Also, too, I met a brother. I mentioned this a week or so ago, a couple weeks now, at one of the malls here in Atlanta. He's with We Buy Black, and you can go check them out at WeBuyBlack.com. All the things that they are selling that are owned, produced by us, you know. So please check them out, WeBuyBlack.com. Brother Lamar, everything you need from American African-owned businesses, shop with We Buy Black. WeBuyBlack.com. The Republic of New Africa has its conference at the end of the month, the 29th through the 1st, April 1st, March 29th through April 1st, in Detroit. I'll bring more information on Republic of New Africa. Get a chance to talk with my brother, Jamoke, and we'll find out all that's going to be happening with the Republic of New Africa. Also, too, the 21st Century Black Survival Conference. I will be in attendance. I realized that my firefighter conference is the following week, so I was happy to find that out. This is the from Straight Black Pride, 21st Century Black Survival Conference, April 14th. April 14th, Saturday, April 14th, right here in Atlanta at the Shrine of the Black Madonna. Doors open at 12 noon. Dealing with spirituality, culture, and survival. Spirituality component will be discussed with the master teacher. This is truly a master teacher if you ever had a chance to. Or you want to know more about African culture, particularly ancient African history, Brother Oshua Kwesi. Oshua Kwesi will talk about African history and spirituality and the origins of the Bible and Quran. Culture, Baba Mwalimu Burudi. Baba Mwalimu Burudi will be talking about a warrior's character. Baba Burudi is an outstanding educator here in Atlanta. and survival. The Irritated Genie will talk about African survival in the 21st century. You don't want to miss this conference. So please contact them and be in attendance on April 14th here in Atlanta, the Survival Conference. Also, too, as we're talking, ASCAC, the Association for the Study of Classical African Civilization, is convening in Philadelphia. In Philadelphia, they are convening. Good brothers, I got calls yesterday from some good brothers and sisters who are asking, "Where am I? Ain't you here?" I was like, "I'm going to attend the ULU conference this year," but although I really wanted to be there because I can get a chance to meet Brother Ralph, who's a listener and caller. He lives in Philadelphia, and get a chance to meet Elliot and Richard and all the other brothers and sisters in the Philly area. And but there'll be a next time, believe me. There will be a next time. So today, we're going to talk about what's going on in sports. In fact, we can talk about any and everything, and everything that we do talk about is from an African-centered perspective. And the sports activity that's going on right now, of course, is the National Collegiate Athletic Association's basketball tournament, March Madness. March Madness. I heard this quote. It's Bill Maher. I don't really crazy about Bill Maher, but I watch Bill Maher and I listen to Bill Maher. You know, but I think the quote was outstanding. He said, "March Madness is a stirring reminder of what made America great. Making tons of money off the unpaid labor of black men and women. Making tons of money off of us, off the unpaid." The NC2A, I've had a serious bug up my boop for a long time about the NC2A. In fact, honestly, I know hate is a strong word, but believe me, I hate the NC2A and how it operates. I hate its organization. I hate its leadership. In fact, when Miles Brand was the leader, and I remember this other caucus, can't remember his name before Miles Brand. Yeah, so what? But when Emmert became the president or chairman of the NC2A, every time I see him and listen to him, I would want to punch him in the face. And I just want to punch him in the face. And in fact, if you followed sports at all, about a month ago, they talked about a scandal because some players through the AAU, which is Amateur Athletic Union, AAU, Amateur Athletic Union, and you probably heard when some of the kids that play AAU basketball, it's huge. My grandson plays in, you know, in all these teams, and they get a chance to go here and there and there. And some of the people and coaches of universities with contacts, with agents and so forth, you know. And so some of the top players were getting money. Well, of course, that's a violation of the NCAA rules. No player should be getting any money. No money. Not a damn dime. Because you have a scholarship. We've given you a scholarship to go to this great institution. You are a student athlete. See, that's how they did that many, many years ago, even before Emmert. They came up with the idea that college students who play in athletics, the emphasis has to be on student, not athletics. So that's why they were able to do what they have done for many, many, many years. And now the reality of the NC2A is a multi-billion dollar industry where the people who provide or the people who make it possible possible for them to make all of that, don't get a dime. They don't get a dime. And when you look at this tournament this weekend, the top teams of the major universities, when they put five on the floor, and even when they substitute two or three players, they're American African. I'm old enough to know and remember when Kentucky, Duke, all them schools, particularly in the South, I'm old enough to remember distinctly, which is Texas El Paso now, but it was Western Texas back then. A movie was made on it called Glory Road. When they started five brothers, I will never forget that in 1967, never. Started five brothers against Adolph Rupp and Kentucky. Pat Riley, the former coach of the Lakers and New York Knicks, and Miami Heat. He's still with the Heat. He was on that team along with a few other Caucasians, Louis Dampier and so forth, that played in professional basketball. In fact, Otis Lattin, who was on that team, he was their big man. He was a strong man for that team. And I met Neville Shedd. Neville Shedd being in the 70s. In the mid, late 70s, he worked in Milwaukee at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, Neville Shedd, who played on that team. In fact, in the movie, he's the one, I believe, that got beat up in the bathroom, in that bathroom scene where they were at the restaurant. Yeah, check out Glory Road. Check that movie out. And really, those five brothers really turned the tide, because many of the universities started to begin to recruit American Africans. Of course, Kentucky didn't. Kentucky didn't get a brother until the 70s, because that's how bigoted Adolph Rupp was. And I remember in football, Alabama, all them schools, Alabama, Tennessee, none of them had any brothers. And so Paul Bear Bryant, he understood that the boosters and all those who have the money and so forth, they didn't want no brothers. If you want to join this call, join this conversation, give us a call. You can add to this discussion at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We are talking today about the NC2A, the National Collegiate Athletic Association, and how it has made billions of dollars. And the people who really help make that money don't get a dime. And the communities where these kids come from to play at these schools, the families of those students who scuffle and scrape and who are at, don't get a damn dime. It is against all the rules. It is against the rule to have the parents to transport the parents up so they can see their kids play in the NC2A tournament or in the championship, in the Final Four, or in the big football playoff and championship game. This, to me, it has to stop. And I was appreciating the dialogue that resulted from the knowledge that the scams were going on and the money and kickback and so forth, and some players taking money. In fact, Arizona lost last night. Arizona coach was suspended, and it's when his best player, DeAndre Eaton, who allegedly had taken or was offered or given $100,000. And supposedly the coach is heard on tape mentioning that fact. Supposedly, I haven't heard it, I don't care. You know, but they lost last night. They got upset by Buffalo. the University of Buffalo. That was probably this. I think this will be the, because some people, because of him and the way Arizona had rallied around it, around the team because of the situation, they were picked to, by some of the pundits, or some of the people who, you know, talk about NC2A basketball, college basketball, or basketball, said that they liked them to be in the Final Four. They were one of their Final Four picks. In fact, I think a lot of them, because out of the millions of people, I think they tried to get 18 million people to fill out a ESPN bracket. All of this stuff has come into vogue, bracketology, office brackets, office, all this stuff, because of these young folks in this tournament, that the majority of the people in this tournament that are playing in it are us, and we don't get no money. And so, you know, so they lost last night. And so they had like 18 million brackets filled out over the internet on ESPN. Of the 18 million, I guess, or 17 million, whatever, only 6,000 are still perfect. And this is after one day. Only 6,000 are still perfect after one day. You know, because of, I'm quite sure they had Arizona winning. Millions of people had Arizona winning. They're out. So now your bracket's messed up. Yeah. So, man, it's a deep subject. I love it, though. I love it. I was going to play this piece from John Oliver, who did a piece last year on March Madness. Pretty much what I'm talking about, how much money these universities have. And this is so much money that the NC2A and these universities have that they find ways to spend it. Also, too, I understand that the other programs within the NC2A, the National Collegiate Athletic Association, baseball, track, soccer, I could go on. But basketball and football is where the money is made. And then these other sports, baseball, so forth, lacrosse, they get money based upon what they have done, but also, too, the university, the facilities. The University of Alabama's facilities and the state of Alabama, one of the poorest states in this country, but yet its university is top-notch, and its facilities, particularly its athletic facilities, are top-notch. They pay the football coach, Nick Saban, $11 million a year. He gets $11 million a year. Ah, but that is not all. Also, aside from that, you know, of course, most football and basketball coaches of major universities that play a big time program make more money, are paid more money than any tenured professor, probably more than the president, the chancellor, whoever else. They are the top paid person in the state, the basketball or football or both. But that's not all. They have other revenue streams. The athletic apparel companies pay the coach. They pay the coach, and the coach tells these players, you have to wear these products. You have to wear Nike, Reebok, Adidas, whatever. Because the coach has a contract with them. But that's not all. He has a television program, a radio program, and other advertisements, other endorsement deals. So I can imagine Nick Saban making not just $11 million, but 10, I mean, but 15, 20, based upon the contracts that he may sign and endorsements that he may have. Probably the one I hate the most, and hate is a strong word, is Dabo Swinney of Clemson. In fact, when Clemson and Alabama play, I hate them both, and I don't give a damn who wins. But Dabo Swinney, in that piece with John Oliver last week tonight, it's a good piece. The only problem I hate with it, and I'm going to get it back to Dabo in a minute. The only problem I hate with it, when they talk to some of the players of what some of the players were offered, courses they were offered so they could stay eligible. When they offered a Swahili course and an African history course, John Oliver said some derogatory things which pissed me off so much. But I understand the mindset of Europeans. So, a Swahili course was offered, and to me, I'm glad they offered the Swahili. I hope they learn Swahili. I hope they learn more history. I hope they understand the importance of having a language that we can speak as African people that Caucasians cannot speak and not understand. I hope we do. So that's why I'm not going to play that piece. It's about a 20-minute piece. But it's a good piece, though. But that bothered me so much. Because it is the crux of the problem, and he lays it out. He truly lays it out. And he has a piece with Dabo Swinney saying, and at that time, Dabo Swinney had a $3 million contract. When he won the championship, they paid him additional and $7 million. And then the other day, I saw a piece where coaches were given bonuses for their teams just to make the tournament. The tournament is 64 schools. The tournament is 64. You can a bonus them. It should be easy, although it is not, because there's a lot of schools that are in their conferences that may be marginal. They can only take so many. But back to Dabo damn Swinney. He was so adamant about players not being paid. Well, when the time that players get paid, that's the time for me to get out. Well, you get your butt out. Because they gave him $7 million, and the same thing would apply to him in Clemson down in South Carolina. That would apply to Nick Saban and all the other coaches. All the other coaches in big-time Division I schools. So to me, I think that we really need to look at this. From the, one of my favorite things to go to is Atlanta Black Star. Here's a piece from Atlanta Black Star from some time ago, a few years ago. 6 reasons NCAA football and basketball is like enslavement.
This call is being recorded.
6 reasons that NCAA football and basketball. Oh, we have a caller. We'll take this caller before I go into these 6 reasons that it is like enslavement. 484. Go ahead, caller.
Hey, good morning, Brother Oshie, Brother Ralph.
Hey, Brother Ralph. How are you today, man?
I'm fine, Brother Oshie.
Good.
I'm listening to your conversation. I agree with you 100%, but I just looked at an article, but it had 15 basketball players that were multimillionaires. Brother, let me tell you something. I understand what the what we're doing to ourselves, and I understand your philosophy, you hate when we say we are our worst enemy.
Right.
But when I look at these 15 brothers that made they're broke, man.
Oh.
Broke.
Yeah.
Shortly after retirement.
Yeah.
So a good economics course.
Right.
Or management course or something is required.
Let me say this. Let me say this, Ralph, because I'm going to, after the break in a little while, I'm going to come back later and I'm going to propose some things, you know, such as that. I'm going to propose something that I thought about many, many years ago of how the NC2A can find a way to compensate these players after all that they sacrifice and do, you know, because I know that I just saw Emmerich again on TV the other day, and like I said, I like to punch him in the face along with Dabo Swinney. I like to punch him in the face too, you know.
Right.
You know, considering the amount of money that they have and have made, while they adamantly say the players shouldn't get nothing, they should not be paid. You know, they're students.
I gotta even put it here, Brother Oshie, because this is what pisses me off. That whole education system is corrupt, and what I mean, it's corrupt. Now, my wife, you know, before I married her, she went to college. She obtained a bachelor's degree from a prestigious university. Here it is, 20 years later, she's still paying that student loan.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which I pay now.
Yeah.
But, you know, I look at that stuff, and it's criminal.
Yeah.
I believe what we should do, if we had real representation and real leadership, what we should do is talk about that should be reparations. We shouldn't owe them nothing to be
right.
educated.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Brother, I agree. I agree with you wholeheartedly.
Taxes and
yep.
that so-called ruthless college education should be reparations. Because let me tell you something. I work with a lot of people in the engineering field. And these people that come from these other countries, their country pays for them to go to school.
Right.
And that's how so many of them over in this country taking over. So I see where this president is coming from when he wants to do certain things, because it's actually harming his people and ours. If it's harming them, you know what it's doing to us.
Right.
So, you know, and this is what I had to say, Brother Oshie. You know, you got some so-called self-acclaimed scholars on it. I hate to switch the subject, but it irritated me so much yesterday. Now, the name of the country, Ethiopia, have you ever did any research on that country?
No. I mean, in terms of what? In terms of the name?
The name, where the name Ethiopia comes from.
The name Ethiopia is Greek.
Exactly. Brother Oshie, thank you. But I got into a conversation with a so-called Moor yesterday. I mean, I'm a good friend. He makes a lot of YouTube clips. And I disagree with 95% of what this guy's saying. So he brings this Ethiopian brother on that's telling me that it came from Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and it was passed. And I'm saying, like, well, this brother's already lost because those people didn't exist. So anyway, I listened to him. I said, well, what does the word Abyssinia mean to you? And neither one of them heard of Abyssinia. But yet these are self-acclaimed scholars, one off the continent.
Yeah.
I said, well, I've met some Ethiopian brothers and sisters, and they said Abyssinia was the name of that part of that continent that actually existed before Mussolini and the Italians came down there.
Right.
So you would say totally disagree with me, say I was right. missing before. So, you know.
Well, many,
so,
right. many,
so
of, many of the names of African countries, and of course the boundaries of African countries, were drawn up by Europeans, you know? So many
right.
of the names that they have, they're you know, just like South Africa, Zazinia, although you still see South Africa, number one, because Caucasians are still in control in reality, even though a lot of Caucasians are going to be kicked off the land that they have stolen. But, of course, Australia has come to their rescue. Australia said, we will.
Right,
yeah.
I saw that.
You saw that? Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
What they should do, which I wish our brothers and sisters would do for us.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
What they should do.
Right.
You know, I don't have any problem with what they do.
No.
I got a problem with what we do.
I agree with you, Brother Ralph. I agree with you.
So even the word Africa, I don't think that was the original name, because I'm looking up texts that were, and they talk about Akibaland.
Right, Akibaland was the name.
Right.
But one thing I know for sure, and I've talked to a number of scholars, Africa is not named after Scipio Africanus or Leo Africanus. You know, this was a proposed, given to Dr. Clark, Renoka Rashidi, who I had on the program this past Monday. All of them will tell you, no, that's not true. You know, in fact, there's a piece that Dr. Ivan von Sertima wrote of Afer and Africa, how it came into being. So, no, the name of the continent, Africa, you know, was known already, is not named after Scipio Africanus, who defeated Hannibal, you know. And I do know that when somebody defeats another, when one group defeats another group, to the victor goes the spoils, so to speak. And,
right.
Of course, they name things the way they want to name things and do whatever they want to do. That's understandable, you know. But, no, that's not right. That's not the case.
Well, Brother Oshie, I know I got a lot of background noise. But what I wanted to say also was, with that NCAA thing, you know, that's because we have no leadership. You see how spineless they are right now.
Yeah.
Coming against the minister. But I believe the minister, you know, put them in I sort of agree with Brother Jay.
Yeah.
He put them in that situation. You know what I mean? But yet it was almost like a call out. But yet he put them in that situation where they know, well, we you know, some of us know that these people are spineless. They have no backbone. And you know, and he called them in his letter, he called them modern day Uncle Tom.
Mm-hmm.
Which I've been saying for like since Bill Clinton. That's all our political leadership are. And, you know, so I agree with Jay to some point. You know, why is he allowed to still be alive and say the things he's saying, and they use that as a measuring stick to go after us? Because this is only like feelers right now. This is not the onslaught that's coming after. This is just showing you who we are and our leadership. This is only the start of it. This is not the end of it. So there's something else coming. So you think these spineless people would go to Congress or the Senate and say, like, no, the NCAA tournament, you know, our players should be playing for free. Matter of fact, their education should be covered by the Reparations Act.
Well, you know, when we hear...
got spineless individuals so-called representing us, and that's what's pissing me off. So that's why I don't put the focus on the enemy, because I know who he is. I know how he operates, and that's what he's going to do.
Right.
I put it on us, because that's the only way we're going to change our narrative, if we get our act together.
Right on.
So, you know, I just got to keep going there, Brother Oshie. Because,
I hear
you. You know, when you blame people, you stay stuck. Only when we look in the mirror and look at ourselves and say, like, you know what? Let me do something about this situation.
Right. This is what we have to do. This is what we should do.
That's
I agree with you.
That's going to bring real change.
Right.
Not staying stuck and blaming people for doing what they always have done. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the NCAA, it's criminal.
Those
coaches are starting to be locked up and everything else for doing certain things. I believe a change is going to come, but it's not going to be in our best interest. It's going to be to protect that institution. But if we had the kind of leadership, I'm going to say this again, that had backbone, none of our players will be playing for free anyway.
Right.
You know, making them all that money. Football and basketball make these institutions the bulk of their money.
Yep.
And who's making it? Those brothers and sisters from some of the poorest communities out here.
That's right.
So I agree with you. I agree. It's criminal.
Mm-hmm.
It is criminal. But you know, I just had to call in, man, and give my two cents
and ask you
about Abyssinia.
Right.
Because from my understanding, that's what that country was called before.
Right, right.
Now, you know, but these two brothers shouted me down, but he called himself a Moor, and I got a problem with that, too. You know what I mean? But,
yeah.
I just...
Because just the Moors are not even claiming to be African.
They're right. Not,
yeah. It's. I mean...
Right. This... It was actually a derogatory word that they called it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but... Mm-hmm. I got to do a little bit more research on that word more, but I know a lot of things this brother says on his YouTube clips, and while we talk to each other, he's a good friend of mine. But man, it's just painful for me to listen to this guy sometimes because he believes in his own lies. So that's the way it is, man. But no, I hated to get off the dialogue, but I had to bring those things up. Our college education should be covered by reparations. Our taxes should be paid by reparations.
Yeah.
And, you know, they shouldn't be taxing us or charging us to get an education. That stuff is owed to us. And Claude Anderson even goes into it a little bit more of the Civil Rights Act of 1866.
Okay.
Why we should be getting these things. So, you know, I just had to call in since those are the things that really bother me. About the NCAA, not only the athletic thing, but the enslavement of even going to get these private loans to get an education. That's slavery also.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll continue listening.
Right on, bro. I appreciate it, Ralph. Thank you.
Thank you, brother.
All right.
Talk to you later.
Have a good weekend. Peace to you.
You too.
Yeah, no, Ralph makes an outstanding point, and I'm going to propose in the next hour what I feel might be a remedy to this situation that I think is just, but hey, to me, something has to happen. I was loving the conversation once those irregularities through NCAA rules came to light and many of the former professional athletes were talking about how this thing needs to change. I mean, you can't even sell your likeness. It's almost like once you've gone into college, they are in control of you through perpetuity. That means forever. Well, one brother, Ed O'Bannon, who played for UCLA, didn't have a big pro career. But in college at UCLA, they won a national championship. And EA Sports, and because of the technology of the day, you would have to admit, if I don't play video games, but of course my grandkids do, and other kids, of course, and then some of them become very, very good at it, and the graphics are so lifelike in football and basketball and other sports on EA Sports and all the other stuff on video games is so real looking. It's phenomenal. They have contracted with players and they got their movements, just how they, you know, shoot the basketball, just how they move, how they, all of these things, you know. I don't know if you ever seen it on television, how they do. They put all these little electrodes over their body and then have them just do stuff. And so then now they can put that on the screen and their physical likeness and all the things that they do and how they move is just phenomenal. Well, when Ed O'Bannon saw that and said, man, that is me. That's my team. That is physically me. He sued and eventually he won. Now, that's EA Sports and that's the NCAA game on EA Sports, which, of course, I'm quite sure upset the NCAA because they were not allowed to use former players. You know. Here, let me go into this article here so we can further have some further discussion before the top of the hour. The NCAA, players don't get paid. The National Collegiate Athletic Association and member colleges and universities are comparable to plantations. I hate that word. Plantations. In fact, really, when you hear the word, see, that's why I'm always saying, dear brothers and sisters, the importance of words. the importance of words. If I say plantation, and you be honest, I'm serious, you be honest. If I say the word plantation, what do you picture? And whose face do you picture working on the plantation? Exactly. They require student athletes who work for them tirelessly without pay for free not to get a dime. With college sports now generating up to $8 billion a year from TV rights, tickets, and licensing fees, the young people whose labor actually make all that money possibly are getting impatient with amateurism rooted in the 19th century British ideas. Don't get a dime. NCAA owns the player's identity. Universities have the right of owners and receive payment for the labor of athletes in various forms, including selling shirts and other officially licensed gear with their names on it, faces, and identifications. While prohibiting the players to earn any money, not only does the NCAA prevent the students from making money from their likeness during their tenure at the school, they also own the rights in perpetuity and continue to profit from the players long after they are gone. College merchandise licensing is a $4 billion industry. $4 billion a year industry. And the NCAA has cornered the market. An NCAA business partner through Equity Motions has called the NCAA's video content archives one of the most unique and valuable contents collections in the world, football and basketball. Many players live below the poverty line. The average scholarship shortfall, that means out-of-pocket expense for each full scholarship athlete, was approximately $3,200 per player during the 2010. This is 2010 and 11 season, because this article was written in 2014. This article was wrote 4 years ago. However, the room and board provisions of a full scholarship athlete leave 85% of the players living on campus and 86% of them players living off campus below the federal poverty line. Meanwhile, the fair market value of an average football, that's the football bowl subdivision, football and basketball player was, now this is the market value. Their market value is anywhere between $120,000 to $265,000, respectively. At larger programs, the disparity is even larger. University of Texas football players' fair market value was $500,000. But they lived $780 below the federal poverty line and had $3,600 scholarship shortfall. Duke players, Duke University basketball, were valued at $1 million while living just $700 above the poverty line in the shortfall of $1,900. I'm telling you. Injury. Now, I heard that this has changed because, like I said, this is a few years ago, that you now can get a insurance. Not only are the players cheated of the income they make for college, universities, and NCAA, but they're also subject to long-term effects of injury sustained while playing in sports. There are no funds set aside for the players who suffer concussion, broken limbs, memory loss, and other ailments. All players get is thank you for your football and basketball playing days and a ring if you want a ring. If you want a championship, you probably get a ring. Maybe the university gives you, how, I don't know. But whatever it is, you got to look at the graduation rates of athletes in these sports. Pathetic. Student athletes are guaranteed full scholarships. A coach can take away a player's scholarship at any point, even if the student is earning good grades. If the coach, if there's a problem, he can take the scholarship away. It's not guaranteed. Athletes are prohibited from even working. Unlike students who receive full academic scholarships, student athletes must surrender their right to work. So if you're an 18-year-old wide receiver with a baby, how can you help feed and care for your child? even Olympians are allowed to endorse deals. You see, that's what's happening. We're going to take a break. When we come back from the break, we'll talk more about this subject. Thank you, Brother Ralph, for giving some support to the subject and others. You can do that too. Just dial 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And we'll be right back.
Give it all you got.
Spread some love a little farther.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Mondays, Acres of Diamonds, here on Time for an Awakening Media Radio, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern. Right after that, it's Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. On Tuesdays, Dr. William Rogers, Black Reality Think Tank from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. on Tuesdays. On Wednesdays, Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness with Revive from 8 p.m. to 10. Then Us Lifting Us, ULU, the Economic Development Cooperative, from 9 p.m. to 11. And Fridays, if it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Tomorrow, Saturday, Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore, 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And then Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness with Revive. And then Sunday night, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard are back again for Time for an Awakening. So, we have a caller. 646, go ahead, caller.
Okay, Brother Oshie, how are you today, brother?
I'm doing fine, Brother Jay. How are you? Good.
I'm good. I hear you talking about the crooked, no good NCAA.
Yes, I am, man. I sure is.
Hey,
definitely.
Hey, listen.
I can't stand them.
You know, my whole feeling with college sports is if it can make me some money, it's all good. You know, I'm not gonna lie to you. That's how I make the majority of my income now is through sports betting. That's what I do.
Is that right?
But I mean, yeah. That's what I do.
Okay.
But my whole thing is this: I believe that the players should be paid, but it should be done on a level to where as it's equal from the 12th man on the bench to the first man.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
My whole thing is this. I support AAU programs. I support all of those things that emphasize education. I'll give you a perfect example. I got a niece and a nephew who are youngsters, who are pretty good athletes. You know what I mean? I got a nephew that's 10 years old. For his age, he's an excellent, excellent player. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the difference from him and some of his teammates are that his parents invest in his development, you know? So I always crack up when, you know, his daddy tell me he got a personal trainer. You know what I mean?
Right.
It just cracks me up. And I'm like, okay. Now, I know his father would like for him to get a scholarship, and that's what he's gearing them towards, hopefully getting a college scholarship like their daughter.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, I know if he gets a college scholarship, he's going to be able to graduate. A lot of these players get scholarships and they're not able to graduate.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
So that's where you get the predatory coaches and the other people that's involved hoping and thinking that if they get a hold of one of these real, real super players, they're going to get some money. That's what this whole college scandal was just about, the payoff.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do I get mad at the parents when the parents taking $100,000?
No.
But I feel as though, you know, you got to make sure you don't get caught. That's my whole thing. Just don't get caught, because the whole system is based on pimping your kid anyway, especially if he has a talent. Now, if he has a talent in the process, he will get paid, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
If he doesn't get paid and he has enough talent, maybe he'll be able to go overseas and make a good career for himself.
Mm-hmm.
I know a number of guys that I grew up with that didn't make the NBA, but went overseas and made a nice living and now are able to come back here and do pretty decent for themselves.
Okay.
And then there's a lot of cats who never made it, who were talented, but because they didn't have the guidance, they couldn't do anything. They passed and all of these things. So, you know, in all honesty, wicked system based on what? Becoming more than the tool of the Yoruba. Commodity for the Yoruba.
Exactly.
To
you're
make
a commodity.
Money off of.
Exactly.
And we don't express that, nor do we put that forward to our children. You know what I'm saying? And the responsibility is of the parent. And if the parent isn't doing the job, then it's whoever is in charge of the kid that doesn't take advantage of them. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we got predators on both sides, the side of the kid and the side of the university. It's an absolute vicious system, but what it all boils down to is it's about money.
That's right.
It's just like I'll give you a perfect example. They talking about allowing betting on the NBA to become legal in all of these states because, you know, the states are looking for, you know, revenue for their states, you know, to help out with, you know, the economics. Now, the crazy thing is, if I'm not mistaken, the NBA is talking about going along with sports betting if you give them, I think it's 1% of each bet that's placed. Think about that. Think about that. Think about the money that's involved.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So then, you know, everybody wants their hand into the dollar. And the thing is, we don't place our kids in a position to, you know, if you're not a super talent, at least use your talent to go and get you an education. Because the one thing I will say, and this is something that I know for a fact because I know a number of kids who have done it. If you go to college on any type of sports scholarship and you involved in basketball or football or even baseball or other sports, and you go to school and you apply yourself and you do the right thing and you don't get in any trouble, it's a 99% chance that they're going to look out for you. You understand what I'm saying? I know a kid that I was mentoring back 10, 15 years ago. He was a pretty good basketball player, good enough to get a Division II scholarship. He went to Division II scholarship, and he played, and he did his thing. And let me tell you how good it worked out for him. One of the alumni of the school got him a job working at the Dalton School, which is probably one of the most prestigious schools in New York City for the Yoruba. He went there, he worked there every summer until he graduated. And you know what happened to him? He got him a job on Wall Street with that same guy.
Okay.
Because he did the right thing.
Sure.
You understand?
Sure. But you
and
know.
That's what I tell all of the guys that I've met and I've talked to that, listen, you got to use this.
But see,
to
Jay.
Get yourself to a position to be looked after.
Right. But see, you know, that example, but there are tons more examples of the usury that happens within that. One example is this.
No question.
There was a brother that played at Creighton. At Creighton University. I can't remember the brother. They used him up for 4 years and kicked him to the curb. They didn't, just like Dexter Manley that played football for the
Kevin Ross.
Yeah. Kevin Ross. Oh, Jay, love you, brother. Kevin Ross. Remember, he went to Marva Collins School in Chicago to learn to read, to start all over again. And you see him, he was like 6'7", 6'8". He's sitting in his little desk with all these other kids. And now he's a teacher. Now he's a teacher.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But Creighton University used him for their basketball program year after year, and realize that he couldn't even hardly read. But they use his athletic talent.
That was more vicious back then, though.
Yeah.
It's vicious now, but there's more money involved, and it's not as vicious. And you know something? This is the thing that always annoys me in this situation like that. How our media don't embrace brothers like Kevin Ross and let them go out there and tell their story. Every now and then, it'll come up, just like Dexter Manley. Mm-hmm. Same type of situation. But you know something, Oshi? The beautiful thing about Dexter is Dexter went through a lot of problems, but today he's all right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Another individual who was caught up in that, I don't know if he was functionally illiterate or not, was Spencer Haywood.
Mm-hmm.
Spencer Haywood today is an extremely rich guy in
right.
real estate. But Spencer was the one who
he was the first one.
Changed the landscape
yes, he did.
Of college sports with the whole
yes, right.
going to the NBA hardship and all, the,
yes,
all
right.
of that.
That's
so,
right.
I mean, he totally wasn't blackballed. I remember Connie Hawkins.
Yep.
The greatest, probably one of the greatest basketball players ever that was denied a period of time of
sure.
showcasing.
Right, because allegedly he had taken some money and so forth, and he wound up going to the
yeah.
Harlem Globetrotters, and then
yeah,
when the ABA
yeah.
came in, he was able
yeah, I read
to
his book, one of the best basketball books you can ever read, called Foul. And you
right.
know what the funny thing is? The book was written by the manager, I think his name was Tom Wolfe, who used to manage the boxer Boo Boo Mancini and Buster Douglas.
Okay.
That's the guy who wrote the book.
Okay.
Now, the thing is this. I remember another guy that I came up with. Two guys that are now, I guess, functioning but are not in the position that they should be. Lenny Cooks and Lloyd Daniels. There's even documentaries on both
yeah.
of them. I haven't seen Lloyd Daniels' documentary yet, but I saw Lenny Cook. And
okay.
I mean, Lenny Cook was the perfect example also of being used. And let me tell you something. I saw him play at the time that him and LeBron James was both juniors. He held his own and did even just as good as LeBron James. But unfortunately, he was illiterate, a functional mm-hmm. illiterate, and he got injured. And, you know, mm-hmm. hey, they cast him aside. So, I mean, it's a very, very vicious system, a very, very racist system.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I remember, like you were saying earlier about Bear Bryant. They didn't recruit no blacks until Sam the Bam Cunningham
yep.
put it on their behind.
Well, see, he told him. He called up.
USC against
right,
Alabama.
Right. He called up John McKay because he knew. He said, bring your boys down here so y'all can play us.
Well,
he knew they was going to dust them cats, but he wanted to show to the boosters and all those who are benefiting that we need some of these boys to be competitive
yeah.
now in this football arena that we're in. We can't come out with all Caucasian team no more. We need these athletes. And look at today. Look at Alabama today. Look at Tennessee today.
Alabama,
Texas.
Alabama is one of the greatest, I gotta say it, football team in the country. You know what I mean? I'm glad this, and show you how racism works in regards to a dollar of the Yerugal and what they'll do. The basketball coach is a black man now.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So you see how we are always being used by this Yerugal
yeah.
to benefit his, baller,
sure.
his bottom down.
That's right.
You know what I mean? That's all it is. We just tools for the Yerugal to get rich off of. And the mistake that we make is that we don't take advantage of it and we don't place ourselves in a position to benefit from it.
Right.
And to change it so that we control it to the point to where we protect these babies and
mm-hmm.
we grow forward. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's just like we at the point, and sometimes I think we at the point in our development, Brother Oshi, to where do we want to go? And when we get to the point, Do we just really want to be incorporated in whiteness and have a comfortable position and not feel as though we being beat? You know, sometimes I ask myself, and I think about this, and, you know, I got to ask Baba Baruti this. With all of the kids that, you know, he has trained and, you know, Haki Madhubuti has trained over the years, with the consciousness of African self, what the hell happened to these kids?
It's a good question.
They go to college, they get an education, and do they lose all of the lessons that was given to them by, you know, these scholars,
right,
these educators? You know what I mean? We really have to ask ourselves.
Right.
And we really have to figure out what is the trappings that this Yorugu, what do this Yorugu do? Because I can't understand, in all honesty, how we are in the position that we in with all of the students that Haki Madhubuti has trained over the last 20 years.
Yeah.
Think about that.
Yeah.
Think about the amount of kids that he trained.
And the other
African understand. Right. You know, I really got to ask Baba Baruti that. Mm-hmm. Because I don't think it may be as bad with Baba Baruti, because I don't know how long Baba Baruti has had his skit, his school.
And
but
also,
know,
too, his school is small. You know,
right.
His school, you know, he may have, you know, 10, 15 students,
right,
you know, where Haki in his school or yeah, some of the other African center schools that I've seen sometimes right, have hundreds, you know.
Yeah.
You know, but
I always ask myself that.
But you
what
know,
the hell happened to these kids?
Yeah,
you get this information, you get this knowledge, you get this wisdom. Yeah, some of y'all go on and get, you know, your PhDs and all of this stuff in African studies. Then
yeah,
a lot of y'all become successful individuals. And what the hell, you forget you African because of the so-called trinkets that you now have? Or is that corporate environment controls?
Well, you know, Jay,
controls you that much?
Jay, you know, unfortunately for many of us, we just try to find a comfortable niche, a comfortable
right,
corner in the Yorugu's madness, you know?
Right.
And so for many of them, I got mine. This is America. America's about individualism, materialism, greed, and violence. And so I got my corner. If you didn't get yours, sorry for you, because it's there to get. I'm doing fine. I use Atlanta as a perfect example of us not understanding how important it is for us to be collective. Because here in Atlanta, where supposedly it's supposed to be the best place for us to be, the best place for us to live historically and now. Because historically, because of the universities, we would come down here and go to Clark, Atlanta, and Morehouse, and Morris Brown, and sister would go to Spelman and so forth, create a career, and then be in the middle, so-called middle class. But now,
right,
today, I use the example of 100%, 100%. 40% of our people are at or below the poverty line, struggling day to day. Another 40% are 2 to 3 paychecks away from joining the other 40 being at or below the poverty line. So they just making it. They making it. You know, they're scuffling. It's,
right,
it's their struggle, you know. Then there's, now you got 20%. That's 80%. Now you got 20%. Of the 20%, 10% of them are doing well. They got good pensions.
Right.
They got good jobs. They may have a business. They live in gated communities. They live in cul-de-sacs and subdivisions. They're doing well. Then there's that other 10% who are doing exceedingly well. Tyler Perry's
right,
and all the athletes, and mostly athletes and entertainers. And a lot of
yeah,
them.
But athletes and entertainment isn't all that it's cracked up to be, believe me, economically.
No, it's not.
Believe me, it's because
no,
once that athlete's check stops coming and you haven't made the
right,
right
investments,
investment,
sure,
and you haven't been a great
sure,
Negro peen, you're not going to basically get no work.
No.
Not from within that industry.
No.
So,
it's,
you know, go ahead.
No,
but yeah,
exactly, because, see, once it's over for you, it's over for you. So I understand that. But there are some that have done well, you know,
right.
and so forth. And so a lot of them move here to Atlanta because here in Atlanta, in its metropolitan area and other counties, because Atlanta is really actually the city of Atlanta is small. In fact, the population of the city of Atlanta, if you check the record, is only like about, I don't know, 500,000 people. But the metropolitan area, because Atlanta's in like five different counties, is like about damn near 6 million people. So they move here to Atlanta because the land they can get very inexpensively and they can build a beautiful home. So the whole thing might cost them $4, $5, $6 million. But on the West Coast, that would cost them $16 million. Or on the East Coast, it was cost them $15 million. So you see, they come down right. here, you know. But yet, Jay, they don't. There's not. We don't have one supermarket here. And even those East brothers Coast. And sisters, even those brothers and sisters who have all that money, they go yeah. to the Urugu for whatever they need.
Yeah.
There is not one place, even amongst those folks, who it says, well, we're going to build us a strip mall here that is going to be ours. You know, clothing, jewelry, all the stuff that we like and need. We're going to have furniture. You know what I'm saying?
It's not in their psyche.
Yeah, it's not.
It's not It's not in their psyche. That's why I had to laugh when all those Negroes in Atlanta, you know, Magic Killer Mike and T.I. and all of them was talking about putting some money in the damn black bank.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, I don't care about you putting money in the black bank. I'm more concerned is I want their stock. That's what I want to be controlled the direction that the bank goes in. And the only way I could do that is to be a shareholder.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Let's keep it real.
Well, let me tell you, me being who I am, I bank with the black bank here, Citizens Trust. It's the only bank here. And then check this out, Jay. In Milwaukee, I had my money in a bank. It was a black bank. I had my savings. That bank was taken over by some Indians, some from India, who are out of Texas. And of course, I could never do nothing with Indians because of their mindset, you know. So I wouldn't do it. So I took my money out and put it over in the black bank. But it doesn't in the other bank, it was earning something. But in this bank, it ain't doing nothing. They don't have
that's the way that they get down because the shareholders don't put the necessary type of pressure or anything involved. And you know, it's nothing wrong with that if they giving loans and doing certain things. That's just part of the course. It's the same way here in New York.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But the thing is, you know, why is it that we feel we can't sustain ourselves in a position of feeding, clothing, giving ourselves shelter, and doing all those things? It's like this whole big thing that I got into an argument on Facebook about the minister. Listen, where's their supermarket? Where's their stores?
Yeah.
Where's this? Where's that?
Yeah, you know, at least under Elijah Muhammad.
At one time,
right.
The nation had that.
Exactly. Under Elijah Muhammad, I can distinctively remember.
Muhammad,
I used to go to the fish store in my neighborhood.
They had the steak and take. They had they would sell the fish. They would have cleaners. They would have certain things. Now, you know, it's a whole different thing. But you call yourself a nation. And that's part of being a nation, is to have those things so that you could sustain your community.
Yeah.
You can't tell – people get in trouble with me because I say you can't call yourself a nation and have your headquarters on the south side of Chicago and have fratricide going on the level that it is.
Yeah.
You can't call yourself a nation.
Yeah.
And I don't care who gets mad, and I'll tell anybody that, because the bottom line is, as a nation, you're supposed to be able to control your community and dictate what's going on. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not going to get into that. I'm going to leave it with what we were talking
about. Okay.
The sports thing. The thing with sports is, like, you know, I really, really feel if you have the opportunity to get a scholarship and your kids have the ability and the talent to get to that point, make sure that they're functional to be able to go to college and get
a degree. So Jay.
And use it or be in a position to whereas, you know, I can say this about Kentucky. If You play for Kentucky's basketball team, you leave, and you don't graduate, you can come back and get a free ride to finish your
degree. And that's part of one of my proposals. And, of course, John Calipari, who coaches Kentucky, I don't like him, but I will give him some props because of this. He goes to that prospective child's home and tells their parents, more than likely their mother, listen, I could say to you that he'll get a good education. This isn't a finest educational institution, da 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 da. But I'm going to tell you like this. If your son comes to Kentucky, I'm going to prepare him to get drafted in the NBA. Because if he gets drafted, he'll get paid. So the focus is preparing your son to get drafted. The focus is not the educational piece, none of that stuff. The focus is to get drafted. Because if he gets drafted, he'll get paid. But if he doesn't get drafted, then, hey, it's up in the air. So he could have played 4 years, even more, and he don't get drafted, and he don't get a scholarship. Once again, it's just like Kevin Ross. We just used him till we used him up.
But you know something also, Oshie, I don't know if you recognize this. When you have schools like the Kentuckys and the Louisvilles, I think you were talking about it earlier, the amount of money that those major sports generate and the amount of money that those coaches are paid. Yeah, I mean, just look at Rick Pitino of Louisville and what he was getting paid in the scandal that happened with his school. But hey, listen, I could say one thing. One of the boys that came out of New York City that was one of Rick Pitino's best players ever at Kentucky, Jamal Mashburn.
Oh, he's doing
Jamal is doing so well.
Jamal Mashburn is doing exceedingly well.
I'm so happy for him. He's probably one of the most successful basketball players ever in regard to business. And Junior Bridgman.
Junior Bridgman.
Junior.
Well, I know Junior Bridgman because he was in Milwaukee. He was at the Bucks.
Oh man.
Yeah, he was at the Bucks.
You know, I had the chance to meet him one day, man. One of the nicest guys.
Yes, he is.
I mean, the pure Negro. Well,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
But, hey,
no, you're right.
Him to be an African.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
But you know, the one thing I can always say is that he has represented himself
well,
him and his family, in a fashion to whereas, from my understanding, he gave back to the community. He hired a whole bunch of black people, and from my understanding, he treated his workers well.
Yeah.
I even from what I heard is he would even help his workers go to college and stuff and stuff like that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, hey, there have been some successful individuals that have come out of that situation. But no, you're right. It's a predatory institution in regards to how they use up our people.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, the bottom line boils down to this, OG. It's the parents' job to prepare their children to be able to go to college and to take advantage of that opportunity. And if they don't, hey.
Yeah, well, the thing is this.
Totally on the coast.
But,
Brother Oshie, as always, man, it's an honor and a privilege, man. And you have a real good weekend, man, because I know you'll be back doing your thing on Monday, man.
You know I will, brother.
I had some things to do today. And I said, no, man, I'm going to change my schedule up because I'm going to enjoy Oshie for the day. You know what I mean? I said, I ran out, did what I had to do early, and I got back here, and I was able to enjoy you, Brother Oshie. And I
appreciate
have to
it.
Tell you, man, you it's a good way to start your day off listening to a brother that gives you an African feel, an African perspective, and put that spirit in your heart because, you know, other than my man Carl Nelson, you can't turn on the daggone radio and listen to anything other than, you know, when Elliot and maybe Scotty puts a good program on or some of the others. So I want to thank you again.
Yeah,
brother,
I appreciate it, Jay.
OG. And listen, your boy Paul out there in London, man, he's really doing his thing, man. I heard him the other day on call again.
Oh, right on. Good.
I can't wait till this show gets on.
Me
too. You
know
what I mean? So enjoy the weekend, brother Oshie, and Hotep, brother.
Hotep, my brother. Peace to you.
All right.
All right, Jay. Appreciate that, Jay. Always. You know I do. Appreciate that. Yeah, Jay, of course, I didn't notice that's how I make my money, betting on sports. A column, and I'm going to do this quickly. We have, you know, we got some time. In the Chicago Tribune, I'm not sure the date of it, but it has to be current because it talks about the scandal. So it's pretty much current. But college basketball's latest scandal makes it clear it's time to let the players be paid for what they're really worth. And one of them, young people was showing a check to DeAndre Ayton, the brother who played for Arizona, signed by Sean Miller, the coach, you know, and as a way to mock them. The fact they were Oregon students when Oregon Ducks were playing Arizona. But this is from David Hall of the Chicago Tribune, and it's dated the 25th of last month. In a Chicago market dominated by professional sports, big-time college basketball often sounds like a misnomer, so that the sport's latest brush with the NCAA hypocrisy probably produced somewhere between an eye roll and a shrug. Yeah, but not for me. But pay attention this time. The stunning revelations about the sport's open secret unearthed in reports by Yahoo Sports and ESPN feel different. It's like a day of reckoning finally has arrived for the NCAA in its obsolete model of amateurism. Its obsolete model of amateurism. This marks the madness likely means top programs worrying as much about FBI findings as RPI rankings, which their focus diverted from one shining moment by nearly 3,000 hours of potentially compromising phone conversations. Think of how nervous that number makes so many coaches. I bet. Do they have me on the wire? One of those calls, according to ESPN, involved Arizona's coach Sean Miller, who, once again, they lost last night to the University of Buffalo. Making arrangements with a rogue agent from ASM Sports to pay elite recruit DeAndre Ayton $100,000, an allegation that resulted in Miller not coaching Saturday night's game. If evidence backs up the allegation, Miller should never coach another game. Good luck in the NBA's G League. This bombshell came on the heels of Friday's Yahoo Sports alleging as many as 25 current and former players at more than 20 Division I programs, many of them blue chips of the sport. Remember, that was a movie. Check that movie out, Blue Chips, with Shaq and Penny Hardaway. And congratulations to Penny Hardaway from now being named the head coach of Memphis, his alma mater. Well, I don't know if he graduated, but the school he went to and played for. Many of them receive impressionable benefits from agencies ranging from free meals to 5- and 6-figure payments. And this was information obtained on only one agency. Imagine how the others operated similarly. Predictably, NCAA President Mark Emmert, who I like to punch in the face, responded with a Shakespearean statement full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. Referencing his appointed commission on college basketball, whatever that is, Emmert dropped committee member Condoleezza Rice's name in the third sentence to establish some credibility. Man, you can get Condoleezza Rice dropping her name some credibility in those particular circles, but you can't get it here, Condoleezza Rice. Involved, well, Condoleezza Rice, for if you don't know, she is on the NC2A's basketball selection committee. She's on that committee and some other stuff that she does. Involved what the NCAA seldom delivers. With these latest allegations, it's clear this work is more important than ever, Emmert said. The board and I are completely committed to making transformative changes to the game and ensuring all involved in college sports will do so with integrity. What a joke. Emmert sounded serious. And boy, I like to punch him in the face. But integrity requires transparency. And the only way the NC2A can promise both will be if Emmert gasps the obvious. The time has come to adopt an Olympic-style compensation structure that permits so-called student athletes in all sports to be paid what the market bears. That ain't gonna happen. Replace so much empty rhetoric with results. Edit a rule book that has been too thick. Damn, it's thick. I mean, it's unbelievable how thick the rule book of NCAA is for too long, and to let sponsors or agents compensate the NCAA's best and brightest the way teenage prodigies and other walks of life, you know, such as singers and dancers or actors, are allowed. Somewhere, a teenage pop star laughs at the idea of Eton getting a measly $100,000 for being one of the best at his sports. Corruption runs so rampant nowadays that massive NCAA deregulations creating a free market offers the smartest, fairest solution to the biggest problem confronting college sports. A high school kid and his family can't be on the take if there are no rules to break. The AAU coaches or middlemen brokering seedy deals between schools and recruits can't wield such power in college basketball underworld if everything is done above board. Another NCAA change, short of removing such restrictions or earning potential, would fail to meet the criteria for the transformative change Emmert promised. We don't need an FBI investigation to discover the current system lines the pockets of everyone but those who are actually making the money. I repeat, you don't need an investigation to discover that the current system lines the pockets of everybody except those who make the money, the young people on that court or on that football field. But the exhaustive nature of the probe affirmed how pervasive the behavior has become. As inflation of interest balloons television rights fees into billions and increases coaches' salaries by millions, a $400 cash advance to a mother of a star player uncovered in the probe warranted hand wringing. So they advanced the poor. She probably had to pay her energy bill. She probably had to pay her damn energy bill. Stop the charade, everyone. Start facing reality that we don't have to like, but must accept the name of fairness and progress. To NCAAs exist, the traditional model Emmert and others cling to indeed works for the majority of young people and women who benefit from a scholarship and value its worth. In fact, they have a great commercial. When if you watch the NCAA, I think there's two commercials. One, you see these kids bouncing basketballs. And basically what it's saying in bouncing the basketballs, because you see all types of kids in all types of terrain, all types of cities, country, da-da-da-da, you know. And basically what the commercial says, if you prepare yourself academically and you have these talents, the NCAA will help you achieve your goals of getting in college with a scholarship. And brothers and sisters, that's true. I used to tell the kids, I coached football on a young level. I didn't coach high school. They were some were high school age, but most of them were middle school age. And I told those kids, all the years that I coached, if you go to school and do your best and maintain a good average, good attendance, and you play sports, you can get a scholarship. It is easy as that. That is true. Because understand this, brothers and sisters. In this country, there is opportunity. There is opportunity. There's not equal opportunity. No, there's not equal. Not in a system of racism. Not in a European Caucasian extremist racist and privileged system. There can't be equal opportunity. There is opportunity. And the most important thing that, of course, some of these young brothers and sisters should do is take advantage of the opportunity when it avails itself. For those of lesser known Division I student athletes from Northeastern to Northwestern, it goes beyond the $250,000 a year college education can cost these days. It affords the youth experiences and opportunities impossible to put on paper, opening a world full of success and satisfaction that would likely be emptier without competing in college sports. But the exceptional peers among them, such as Eton and Michigan State's Miles Bridges in basketball, or Oklahoma's Baker Mayfield and UCLA's Josh Rosen in football. Let me start with Josh Rosen. Josh Rosen is a Caucasian who played quarterback for UCLA, who had a hot tub in his room. but he is of wealth. His family has wealth. And he said, it is difficult for a student who is involved in big time athletics to really go through the rigors of education. Richard Sherman, the cornerback who just left the Seattle Seahawks and is now with the San Francisco 49ers, who played at Stanford. And I know in this society there's four or five universities that you say their names and they're huge. It's, of course, it's Harvard, Yale, Stanford, and MIT, and you could probably throw in a few other big colleges. But you talk about high academic scholastic schools, Harvard, Yale, Stanford, MIT, and a few others. But so he played at Stanford. So he knows what he's talking about. And Josh Rosen is saying the same thing. It is a very, very difficult. Truly exceptions to the NCAA rule. Live a different reality, command more attention, generate more revenue, and simply deserve better. They deserve to be treated differently than the majority of NCAA athletes because, like it or not, they are different, at least in terms of how they potentially affect the bottom line that matters than anything in higher education, and that's money. These individuals on that football field that you watch on Saturday, and the basketball course that you watch all the time during the weekend on Sundays, and even say, I remember they used to have no basketball on Sunday, college basketball on Sunday. That was a day. I'm old enough to remember these things. Hell, I'm 65. Shit, I'm old enough to know. I can remember these things. But now because of money and how big it is, it's there every day. In fact, the training is 24/7, 365. When you put a scholarship in that football program, right now they're preparing for spring football games. And then the summer start working out, and the season starts in September, late August, September. Goes all the way into the end of January. Or being the beginning of January, they had their championship. So I'm saying to you, brothers and sisters, it's all about that money. Denying this is disingenuous at best, hypocritical at worst. Traditionalists might acknowledge, grudgingly or not, how corporate intervention into intercollegiate athletics already dictates where players play and coaches coach. The outcry won't get any louder if the NCAA relaxes the rules to allow such investments. The landscape likely won't shift dramatically enough to affect the balance of power in the major revenue-producing sports of men's basketball and football. One thing definitely would change. Fewer scandals would sully college sports, which are in bad enough shape to make a federal case out of it. And that is no exaggeration that the FBI is looking at college athletics. Here's my proposal. In the big money-making conferences, not all the college athletics, but in the big money-making conferences, the individuals in basketball and football specifically, they don't have to go to college. Excuse me, they don't have to go to school. They're in college. Let's say, for instance, any school. They are guaranteed a college education after their 4 years or whatever amount of years of eligibility is over. Whatever amount of time they've given to the university to make them successful, they will get a scholarship because they can't focus on school. So after their playing days are over, either in college or in the pros if they are fortunate in that, but at that school that they went to, that they signed, and they played football, and they played basketball, and they made tremendous amounts of money, they will be guaranteed an advanced degree. That's right. They would be guaranteed a master's degree because of what they provided for the school. They would get paid like a per diem, something that would be utilized and put away for them. So when their time is up, they may walk away from that school with $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 or more, how it's worked out. Also, because I remember Chris Webber, when Chris Webber left Michigan, part of the Fab Five, and he saw his number 4 jersey in the student bookstore, whatever it is, merchandise store. He couldn't afford to buy it. His jersey, his name. He couldn't even afford to buy it, and nor did he get a dime from it. He said, "That's time for me to go." And the reason why a lot of these college coaches, big time college coaches, would not want to coach in professional ranks, you can see why. They get paid and they cuss kids out. You couldn't do that in the pros. I bet you that year or two that Nick Saban was at Miami, he couldn't wait to get out of here. I can go to the pros and make tons of money. Excuse me, I can go to college and make tons of money. And these kids can't say a damn thing to me. So you would get paid, we put away. There would be courses for you on financial literacy, investments, all the other pitfalls that would happen. It would be a whole thing, because now to me, you would be treated as at the big schools, the big money generating schools. Because I do understand that this big money, and a lot of times this money is so huge and so much that they just think about what the hell they can buy or build with all this money. In fact, in that John Oliver piece, they talk about all how beautiful the facilities are at the University of Alabama, one of the poorest states in this country. But how great, he says. Oh, Alabama, shame on you for being so ostentatious, showing off your wealth. Alabama, I thought I'd never say that. I agree. And so this money would be there for them. The opportunity for education would be there for them. And they would do what they love to do, play basketball, play football, and the university would benefit from that. Because to me, there is no doubt about it. This has been a usury system from day one, particularly since the university started gaining the notoriety, the college sports started gaining the notoriety that it has in the last 30-something years, where now coaches make tons of money. Nick Saban, $11 million a year from the university. In fact, Calipari at Kentucky, the basketball coach, signed a huge contract over an extended period of time. But like I said earlier when in a conversation when Jay was on, I would give him props because he told the parents of those kids, "I'm going to help your kid play to get drafted." I'm not talking about the academics of the University of Kentucky and how great it is, how many tenured professors and all the things that they've done. No, I'm going to say to you, I'm going to help your son get drafted in the NBA, because if he gets drafted, he'll get paid. If he doesn't get drafted, because you understand, in the NBA, there's not a multiple number of rounds to get drafted. There's only, I think, 2 or 3 rounds. After that, you free agent, and it's up, you know, it's... It's tenuous at best. Can you, can you make the squad? So this is my proposal. That money that they have for that student, whatever, how that can be worked out with all the billions of dollars that it has in the big schools that the big conferences, the Big Ten, the Southeastern College, the Southwestern College, the Pac-12, all these with the big schools that make the money. I ain't talking about, because even in the NCAA tournament yesterday, Buffalo beat Arizona. I think Buffalo is a mid-major. I ain't talking about the mid-major schools. If your game is serious enough, you are going to be at one of these big schools. One of the best things for me last year, Super Bowl with New England and Atlanta, was the pregame. When all of these brothers from the HCBUs who are in the Hall of Fame, these brothers, these men, Bobby Bell, Tank Younger, Willie Brown, all of these guys, Walter Payton, Jerry Rice, all of these brothers could have played in major college sports back in the day, but they were not allowed to. So they played in the HCBUs. Imagine if the HCBUs had that talent today. I saw a game the other day with, who was it? Hampton and somebody. So they beat North Carolina Central, and they went to the tournament. They beat Hampton. But I'm thinking and seeing how the game was being played, and I could see that, you know, no, it is not at the level where it is in Division One, or the big-time Division One. Let me put it that way. Because Hampton, they are Division One. They are that game, the winner of that game went to the tournament, you know. But we're almost to a close. I thank those who have listened, because – you know, this has been a pet peeve of mine. The NC2A will always be until it's changed, and changed properly. Because when Connecticut won the championship, Shabazz Napier, who now plays for, I think, Portland, he was drafted by Miami, but he was saying, "Man, there's some days I can't even find any food." Well, the NC2A heard that because they made a big deal out of it, and now there's some kind of meal program that they have for players. So once again, nothing radical, nothing serious. They don't give a damn. Just throw him, give his ass a sandwich. You know, I hate the NC2A, and believe me, Dabo Swinney and Mark Emmert, I like to punch them in the face. And I'm not a violent person. I am not, but I hate the fact that this is going on and they're adamant, I mean seriously, dogmatically adamant about not doing it while they make millions, while they make millions. Man. So enjoy the tournament. Hope your team wins. Hope you do well in your brackets if you did that, if you filled out a bracket, you know. But in this kind of system, brothers and sisters, that's why I rail against this system, not just the NC2A, but the overall system of European Caucasian supremacy, racism, and privilege. Actually, extremism. I love that word better. Thanks, Brother Paul. This is what happens. This is what happens. In the words of Stephen Biko, we end this program like we end all our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. And not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and don't want to pay for. Dr. John Henry Clark. Brothers and sisters, have a blessed and wonderful weekend. Be safe. Hopefully you'll be back with us next Monday. Peace, family. Hotep.